Chapter 45. Used to have them, apostrophe Cytheria returned. How strong we should be. Oh, what power is it that he exercises over her, swaying her just as he wishes. She loves me now. Mrs. Morris in her letter said that Miss Alcliffe prayed for me. Yes, she heard her praying for me, and crying. Miss Alcliffe did not mind an old friend like Mrs. Morris knowing it either. Yet in opposition to this, notice her dead silence and inaction throughout this proceeding. Apostrophe, apostrophe, it is a mystery. But never mind that now, apostrophe said Owen impressively. About where Mrs. Manston has been living. We must get this part of it first. Learn the place of her stay in the early stage of their separation, during the period of Manston's arrival here, and so on, for that was where she was first communicated with on the subject of coming to Knapwater, before the fire, and that address too, was her point of departure, when she came to her husband by stealth in the night, you know the time I visited you in the evening, and went home early in the morning, and it was found, that he had been visited too. Ah! Couldn't we inquire of Mrs. Leet, who keeps the post office at Carriford, if she remembers where the letters to Mrs. Manston were directed? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he never posted his letters to her in the parish, it was remarked at the time. I was thinking, if something relating to her address might not be found in the report of the inquest in the Casterbridge Chronicle of the date. Some facts about the inquest were given in the papers to a certainty. Apostrophe, apostrophe, her brother caught eagerly at the suggestion. Who has a file of the Chronicles? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he said. Apostrophe, Mr. Ronham used to file them, apostrophe said Cytheria. He was rather friendly disposed towards me too. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Owen could not, on any consideration, escape from his attendance at the church building till Saturday evening. And thus it became necessary, unless they actually wasted time, that Cytheria herself should assist. I act under your orders, Owen, apostrophe she said. XVI. The events of 1 week, 1. March the 6th, the next morning the opening move of the game was made. Cytheria, under cover of a thick veil, hired a conveyance, and drove to within a mile or so of Carriford. It was with a renewed sense of depression that she saw again the objects which had become familiar to her eye during her sojourn under Miss Alcliffe's roof, the outline of the hills, the meadow streams, the old park trees. She hastened by a lonely path to the rectory house, and asked if Mr. Ronham was at home. Now the rector, though a solitary bachelor, was as gallant and courteous to womankind as an ancient Iberian. And, moreover, he was Cytheria's friend in particular, to an extent far greater than she had ever surmised. Rarely visiting his relative, Miss Alcliffe, except on parish matters, more rarely still being called upon by Miss Alcliffe, Cytheria had learnt very little of him, whilst she lived at Knapwater. The relationship was on the impecunious paternal side, and for this branch of her family the lady of the estate had never evinced much sympathy. In looking back upon our line of descent, it is an instinct with us to feel that all our vitality was drawn from the richer party to any unequal marriage in the chain. Since the death of the old captain, the rector's bearing in Knapwater House had been almost that of a stranger, a circumstance which he himself was the last man in the world to regret. This polite indifference was so frigid on both sides, that the rector did not concern himself to preach at her, which was a great deal in the rector, and she did not take the trouble to think his sermons poor stuff, which in a cynical woman was a great deal more. Though barely 50 years of age, his hair was as white as snow, contrasting strangely with the redness of his skin, which was as fresh and healthy as a lad's. Cytheria's bright eyes, mutely and demurely glancing up at him Sunday after Sunday, had been the means of driving away many of the saturnine humors that creep into an empty heart during the hours of a solitary life. In this case, however, to supplant them, when she left his parish, by those others of a more aching nature which accompany an overfull one. In short, he had been on the verge of feeling towards her that passion to which his dignified self-respect would not give its true name, even in the privacy of his own thought. He received her kindly, but she was not disposed to be frank with him. He saw her wish to be reserved, and with genuine good taste and good nature made no comment whatever upon her request to be allowed to see the Chronicle for the year before the last. He placed the papers before her on his study table, with a timidity as great as her own, and then left her entirely to herself. She turned them over till she came to the first heading connected with the subject of her search: disastrous fire and loss of life at Carriford. The sight, and its calamitous bearing upon her own life, made her so dizzy that she could, for a while, hardly decipher the letters. Stifling recollection by an effort, she nerved herself to her work, and carefully read the column. The account reminded her of no other fact than was remembered already. She turned on to the following week's report of the inquest. After a miserable perusal, she could find no more pertaining to Mrs. Manston's address than this: Abraham Brown, of Hoxton, London, at whose house the deceased woman had been living, deposed, etc., nobody else from London, had attended the inquest. She arose to depart, first sending a message of thanks to Mr. Ronham, who was out of doors gardening. He stuck his spade into the ground, and accompanied her to the gate. "Can I help you in anything, Cytherea?" he said, using her Christian name by an intuition that unpleasant memories might be revived if he called her Miss Gray, after wishing her goodbye as Mrs. Manston at the wedding. Cytherea saw the motive and appreciated it, nevertheless replying evasively, "I only guess and fear." He earnestly looked at her again. "Promise me that, if you want assistance, and you think I can give it, you will come to me." "I will," she said. The gate closed between them. "You don't want me to help you in anything now, Cytherea?" he repeated. If he had spoken what he felt, "I want very much to help you, Cytherea, and have been watching Manston on your account," she would gladly have accepted his offer. As it was, she was perplexed, and raised her eyes to his, not so fearlessly as before her trouble, but as modestly, and with still enough brightness in them to do fearful execution as she said over the gate, "No, thank you." She returned to Tolchurch weary with her day's work. Owen's greeting was anxious. "Well, Cytherea?" She gave him the words from the report of the inquest, penciled on a slip of paper. "Now to find out the name of the street and number," Owen remarked. "Owen," she said, "will you forgive me for what I am going to say? I don't think I can take any further steps towards disentangling the mystery. I still think it a useless task, and it does not seem any duty of mine to be revenged upon Mr. Manston in any way." She added more gravely, "It is beneath my dignity as a woman to labor for this. I have felt it so all day." "Very well," he said, somewhat shortly. "I shall work without you then. There's dignity in justice." He caught sight of her pale, tired face, and the dilated eye which always appeared in her with weariness. "Darling," he continued warmly, and kissing her, "you shall not work so hard again. You are worn out quite. But you must let me do as I like." March the TENTH, on Saturday evening Gray hurried off to Casterbridge, and called at the house of the reporter to the Chronicle. The reporter was at home, and came out to Gray in the passage. Owen explained who and what he was, and asked the man if he would oblige him by turning to his notes of the inquest at Carriford in the December of the year preceding the last, just adding that a family entanglement, of which the reporter probably knew something, made him anxious to ascertain some additional details of the event, if any existed. Certainly, apostrophe said the other, without hesitation, though I am afraid I haven't much beyond what we printed at the time. Let me see, my old notebooks are in my drawer at the office of the paper. If you will come with me, I can refer to them there. Apostrophe apostrophe his wife and family were at tea inside the room, and with the timidity of decent poverty everywhere he seemed glad to get a stranger out of his domestic groove. They crossed the street, entered the office, and went thence to an inner room. Here, after a short search, was found the book required. The precise address, not given in the condensed report that was printed, but written down by the reporter, was as follows. Abraham Brown, lodging housekeeper, 41 Charles Square, Hoxton. Apostrophe apostrophe Owen copied it, and gave the reporter a small fee. I want to keep this inquiry private for the present, apostrophe he said hesitatingly. You will perhaps understand why, and oblige me. Apostrophe apostrophe the reporter promised. News is shop with me, apostrophe he said, and to escape from handling it is my greatest social enjoyment. Apostrophe apostrophe it was evening, and the outer room of the publishing office was lighted up with flaring jets of gas. After making the above remark, the reporter came out from the inner apartment in Gray's company, answering an expression of obligation from Owen with the words, that it was no trouble. At the moment of his speech, he closed behind him the door between the two rooms, still holding his notebook in his hand. Before the counter of the front room stood a tall man, who was also speaking, when they emerged. He said to the youth in attendance, I will take my paper for this week now I am here, so that you needn't post it to me. Apostrophe apostrophe, the stranger then slightly turned his head, saw Owen, and recognized him. Owen passed out without recognizing the other as Manston. Manston then looked at the reporter, who, after walking to the door with Owen, had come back again, to lock up his books. Manston did not need to be told that the shabby marble-covered book which he held in his hand, opening endways and interleaved with blotting paper, was an old reporting book. He raised his eyes to the reporter's face, whose experience had not so schooled his features, but that they betrayed a consciousness, to one half initiated as the other was, that his late proceeding had been connected with events in the life of the steward. Manston said no more, but, taking his newspaper, followed Owen from the office, and disappeared in the gloom of the street. Edward Springrove was now in London again, and on this same evening, before leaving Casterbridge, Owen wrote a careful letter to him, stating there all the facts that had come to his knowledge, and begging him, as he valued Cytherea, to make cautious inquiries. A tall man was standing under the lamp post, about half a dozen yards above the post office, when he dropped the letter into the box. That same night too, for a reason connected with the encounter with Owen Gray, the steward entertained the idea of rushing off suddenly to London by the mail train, which left Casterbridge at 10 o'clock. But remembering that letters posted after the hour at which Owen had obtained his information, whatever that was, could not be delivered in London till Monday morning, he changed his mind, and went home to Knapwater. Making a confidential explanation to his wife, arrangements were set on foot for his departure by the mail on Sunday night. 3. March the 11th, starting for church the next morning several minutes earlier than was usual with him, the steward intentionally loitered along the road from the village till old Mr. Springrove overtook him. Manston spoke very civilly of the morning, and of the weather, asking how the farmer's barometer stood, and when it was probable that the wind might change. It was not in Mr. Springrove's nature, going to church as he was, to return anything but a civil answer to such civil questions, however his feelings might have been biased by late events. The conversation was continued on terms of greater friendliness. You must be feeling settled again by this time, Mr. Springrove, after the rough turnout you had on that terrible night in November. Apostrophe apostrophe, but I don't know about feeling settled either, Mr. Manston. The old window in the chimney corner of the old house I shall never forget. No window in the chimney corner where I am now, and I had been used to it for more than 50 years. Ted says 'tis a great loss to me, and he knows exactly what I feel. Your son is again in a good situation, I believe. Said Manston, imitating that inquisitiveness into the private affairs of the natives which passes for high breeding in country villages. Yes, sir. I hope he'll keep it, or do something else, and stick to it. Tis to be hoped he'll be steady now. He's always been that, I assure ye, said the old man tartly. Yes, I mean intellectually steady. Intellectual wild oats will thrive in a soil of the strictest morality. Intellectual gingerbread. Ted's steady enough, that's all I know about it. Of course. Has he respectable lodgings? My own experience has shown me that that's a great thing to a young man living alone in London. Warwick Street, Charing Cross, that's where he is. Well, to be sure, strange. A very dear friend of mine used to live at number 52 in that very same street. Edward lives at number 49, how very near being the same. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.